You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
Hey people, how are you doing? We are live. Welcome to what is episode 192 of the Sports Therapy Association podcast. My name is Matt Phillips, creator of runchatlive.com. And as always, this episode is being recorded on a Tuesday at 8 o'clock on the Sports Therapy Association YouTube channel and the Sports Therapy Association Facebook page and in the Facebook group as well. So if you are listening to the podcast recording and you like the idea of joining us live, then all you need to do is head along to one of those places at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. Normally on a Tuesday, we've got some coming up at 9 o'clock. So do keep an eye out on social media, UK_STA. But that's how you can join us live and be part of the live lounge and ask our guests questions face to face, as it was some questions emailed into me, matt@thesta.co.uk. And or answer questions in the live lounge put to people who have chosen to join us live. In this episode of Ask Us Anything, we're going to start a new series. There'll be about four or five of them, hopefully, if it proves popular, where we are going to focus on a particular population of a sport. So this episode is Therapy for Runners, which, as the title suggests, means the panel are going to be asking questions on working with running clients. Next month will be Therapy for Team Sports on the first Tuesday of the month. And then in future months, we plan to have Therapy for Swimmers. And we're also going to have Therapy for Cyclists. And if you're interested in another sport, which you think could fill a whole episode, then feel free to email that suggestion to me, matt@thesta.co.uk. So that's as much as I'm going to do now. So I'm very keen to get the panel up. We've got a fantastic selection of working therapists who all work with runners in one form or another. If you are in the live lounge and you've decided to join us live, then thank you very much. When you do ask a question, your question will come up onto the screen, so I can bring it there. If you do find that your identity is hidden, it's just because you haven't clicked on the Facebook group security link, which is basically go to b.live/comments-issue. That should be in the notes on the Facebook group if you need it. That just gives Facebook permission to use your logo if you bring a question up. But I'll remind you in case I see any Facebook users come up and without their identity. Right then, so no particular order. I shall now go ahead and we will start Ask Us Anything, Therapy for Runners, with the STA panel.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
Right, we've got a mass entrance of people now, so you can all just say hi at the same time. Remember, this is a podcast and no one can see you waving. Let's get that out of the way now.
Hello.
Apart from people left on this live, welcome everybody. It's really exciting to see you all here. It's so cool. We've got such a great panel here, people from different backgrounds. So I'm very excited. And if you are joining us live, then don't forget to say hi in the comments and ask our people questions. I've given them permission to jump on your questions rather than what I'm saying, because again, all of these podcasts are about giving you the information you're after. So feel free to ask. And for people who are on the podcast, we'll just introduce slowly, but surely people who are in the panel. So just going round, if you'd like to say what your name is, where you are in the country and what your experience of working with runners is, then that'd be great. So let's start off on my screen. I can see Shane, first of all. So Shane, do this the favor of introducing yourself, would you?
Yeah. So hi, I'm Shane Robinson and I started life out very early as a runner back when I was 15 years old. I'm now 33. So I've run a long time and it's kind of guided my sort of passions in life, my professions. So I've ended up becoming a sports massage therapist and working with runners and becoming a running coach. I'm involved in parkrun. I've worked in a running shop. So I like to feel like I've covered a lot of facets of the industry. So it's a brief bit about me, and my business at the minute is currently Active Edge Sports Therapy, and that's what I'm trying to build up in Lincoln to hopefully help as many runners and many people as I can up in Lincoln.
Fantastic. That was so condensed. You've done this elevator pitch before. Very professional. You did forget to tell everybody, and very modest, that you're what's your 10K at the moment?
So my 10K best is around 30 minutes.
There we go. I mean, that's important. That's what our listeners are really thinking. And you're probably the only person who will reveal their 10K time on the panel tonight. So it's good that one of the sessions. So that's great. No, great. Thanks for joining us, Shane. So yeah, we'll make sure that all links to websites for each of our panel and ways to get in contact with them will be in the show notes. But yeah, that's Director of Active Edge Sports Therapy, Shane Robinson, in the panel. Moving across, again, no particular order, but Hannah Tabram, would you be so kind to introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hi, so I'm Hannah Tabram. I'm a sports massage therapist in Norfolk. I trained to do sports massage because I started running fairly late on, sort of in my kind of mid to late 30s. I'm not telling you what year it was, how old I was. But I started running for my mental health, and I decided I wanted to do something that would help people to keep moving themselves because of the benefits. And then since then, I have got very into Canicross, which is running with dogs, running attached to dogs. So that is a sport in its own right. It's a bit of a niche sport, and it's also a sport that has its own particular challenges, I think, and injury things. So yeah, I will be talking about that a little bit.
Well, Woody, if the technical language tonight is too much for you, then there will be a glossary at the end for some of the words we're using. But that's really cool, Hannah. I'm so pleased that you're here, because I think runners with dogs is something that can shock therapists when they do walk through the door, because your mind is slightly blown. And it's a great example of where everything you thought about what a runner should maybe be doing is totally out of the water, which is what we should do all the time as individuals. So, but also I think, depending on where you are in the world, it's probably a market and an area of runners which are a little bit untapped. And if you do start working with these people, there's an awful lot of you, aren't there? And you're all kind of in.
Yeah, there are more and more of us. And definitely I've had clients who said they've been to sort of therapists who haven't really understood what Canicross is or what they're doing. So it is a useful thing to know about.
This definitely is an eye-opener, so that's really exciting. Thanks so much for joining us. Right, let's move on my screen to bottom left, first row. Penny, tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm a sports massage therapist and a soft tissue therapist. And I just literally started my running journey in 2018. So I'm a kind of like a late runner. But I got really obsessed with it. Like, I joined a club and I run quite a lot, and big races and all of that. And then kind of like increase the distance of running up to a half marathon, and I don't dare do a full. I'm just there. That's the maximum amount of distance I want to cover, because I have a lot of clients coming in that do ultra running and they have so many injuries. I wouldn't want that for myself. So yeah, ideally we want to help all runners out there, but there's so many variables that we have to consider.
That's great. Very powerful closing statement. So true. Fantastic. So yeah, again, we'll put your links, Penny, thank you very much, at the end in the show notes. So that's Penny DeMoss from Soma Sports Massage Therapy. And we'll give the website links and all that at the end. Thank you very much. Let's move across to Chris Kitson.
Hello. Yeah. So Chris Kitson. So my business is Rockstar Runners. So I guess like I got into running a little bit. So I'm based up in Leeds. I actually got into running through my clients. It was actually, they basically inspired me to give it a go, and then kind of moved on into triathlon. And then yeah, since I've kind of niched back down into running a little bit more, work pretty much exclusively with runners now, as a sports therapist, do a little bit of coaching as well alongside that, so they work really well together. And yeah, currently kind of on the way for Manchester Marathon myself in a couple of weeks time, and yeah, moving towards another kind of ultra marathon later on in the year. That's me.
Good luck.
Yes. Yeah, good to hear you. Yeah. Again, the listeners are like, oh, one of us. We'll listen to this one, definitely. So he's doing a race and everything. And Rockstars Runners is looking amazing, Chris. Obviously, we've known each other for a long time, and you've spoken at Therapy Expo. You've been a guest on the show back in where we were in double figures in 19 and 22, not 19, 22, in episode 19 and episode 22. So it's really been exciting and fun to join you on your journey. And yeah, if you haven't checked out Rockstar Runners yet, then make sure you do. Amazing new website. Chris is new, but the website is relatively new. It's been a bit of a nightmare, is it, Chris? Or glad to finally have it all together?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been, like a lot of people, it was a long time coming that we finally got it over the line.
No, it's looking wicked. And as always, on the SDA podcast, we're looking at all aspects of business, and website hosting came up in social media again today. Somebody asked a question about that and having a website. Do you need a website? What should my website give? But yeah, if you want like an example of, won't be for everybody's needs, but it's got bells and whistles and more. So yeah, check out Rockstars Runners, rockstarrunners.com. Come. Right. Fantastic. And Sarah Clatworthy, last but not least. Sarah, tell us about yourself.
Hi, yeah, I'm a sports massage therapist also. I qualified 11 years ago. That was mainly because I started running as well. So there's some echoes that I hear around this panel that true for them also. So once I started getting injured, I was really interested in why and what was going on. So I got into massage at level 3 and worked up. And then since then, I've just been trying to add to my experience and what I can offer my clients, doing lots of different types of courses. Like, I've just done a very max analysis for runners recently, which was brilliant, very helpful. Started using that a lot now with the runners that I see. But also anything that would help me look after my clients at a deeper level. So kinesiology taping, neurological testing, and some things I've done for fun, which is beginner's course in sonography, just because I've been interested and a bit of a geek, so I wanted to get as much information as possible out of that. So, but yeah, most of my clients, I see probably about 60% of them are runners. So I'll be learning from some of these guys tonight as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And what part of the country did you say you're in, Sarah?
Gloucestershire.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, again, just before we crack into what I know is going to be so much valuable information tonight. Another reason for the SDA podcast is obviously to help networking and you get to know each other. So if one of our speakers is in the same neck of the woods as you, then it might be a chance to kind of reach out and maybe even meet up, depending on whether that's in your interest or not. But it's just a case of sharing information, which is what we kind of do since COVID. So do pay attention to where, well, first of all, just pay attention. And second, pay attention to where these people are, because they might be just down the road from you. It's incredible. Sometimes speakers on Ask Us Anything realize, I'm just down the road from you. We've never met. So it's great. We've got a nice representation from around England. No one from Scotland is there. I'm gonna pay for that, aren't I? All right, sorry, Stevie. Sorry, Leslie, but yeah, but we are covering the England at least pretty well. Right, okay, we're going to crack into it. Thanks everyone who's joining us. We've got a nice load of people in the live lounge, so thank you very much, and let questions come through as and when they cross your mind, people. But we're going to jump into the topic for tonight: therapy for runners. How do we start this off? The first thing I'm really interested in is all of you guys run. Okay, you all runners. Okay, so I remember when I was quite. Well, in my career, I remember more than one therapist saying to me, Matt, I know you run, but make sure you see other runners because it's going to be seasonal. You're going to suffer if you only work with runners, Matt. And I was like, but I only like runners. I only identify with runners. I don't understand swimmers. I don't understand anyone who chases the ball. Forget that. I've got no empathy with anybody who chases after the ball or even works in a team. What's that all about? Ridiculous. Where people can let you down or you can let others down. Don't want to know. And I think that's quite common with runners. It's just you, the road or the terrain, wherever you are, and it's up to you to do what you want to do, unless you're doing a relay or something, or unless you've got a dog. But yeah, do you think it really, we're all biased as we are runners, but do you think it helps being a runner if you're going to really work in that target market? Anybody can start in any order.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. 100%.
I think you said it, Matt. I think you need to understand the runner. Yeah. So I think being a runner helps you do that. And before I got into therapy, when I, you know, I had no idea I was going to go down this route. And I think one of you also said it earlier, it frustrated me when people didn't understand that if I was telling them I was running 70 miles a week and the response I got was, oh, well, that's too much. It kind of didn't really resonate with me. So I think it helps to understand the runner, but on the same basis, just being a runner doesn't necessarily help because runners are who we are treating, so it's not helping them. So I think it's finding that balance and making sure you understand who you're treating.
Yeah,
opinion.
That's so cool. I just want to resonate that for, because being a runner really helps, but being a runner isn't enough. I think that's such a cool thing. I just needed to repeat that. That's great.
Definitely, like the conversations, isn't it? Obviously, if you've got someone in clinic and you can have those similar conversations, you can talk about, you know, the common races that they might do and the types of sessions that they're doing, and just have that kind of common terminology is super important, I think. And it can really help in terms of a connection with someone, which obviously we know the importance of in general within getting that kind of therapeutic alliance there as well.
Mm. I think it helps with things like if you're having to have a conversation and say, well, actually, maybe you do need to step it back for a week or two and then build it back up. If you can say, I understand that's not an easy thing to do and I wouldn't ask you to do it. As a runner, I wouldn't ask you to do that. I'm telling you this because it's for the best. I think people sometimes think, you know, running's really important to them and they don't necessarily understand that you understand that, if that makes sense. You can empathize with them and say, I know it's not an easy thing to do, but in the long term, it will do you good. And that is why I'm asking you to do it, not just for the sake of it.
Yeah, I always say that runners are a different breed. We are a different breed and we need someone to understand us or communicate.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? What sets running apart? Why, is it just our bias or is there something different about the activity of running?
It's just because we're great. Which is brilliant.
I was going to say because we're idiots, but
sorry.
I think there's a whole bit of us out there.
I saw a really great thing on social media that somebody had posted, like saying when you tell people you can do this activity if it's not above a 3 out of 10 on the pain score, don't say that to runners because they'll underscore themselves. Give them something. It was like, tell them it can be mild, tolerable pain that doesn't change your gait. Don't give them a number because they'll be like, of course it's a 3. It's like your leg's hanging off. It's not a 3. You know, and I think that's something in that.
That's true. Yeah, I think with runners and the uniqueness of us is, I mean, it's a whole body sport. It's if you go for a 1 hour run, like the loading of that is quite high. And even though it's different, it's borderline more than, you know, deadlifting 200K. So I think like that's also why a lot of us get injured. So I think runners experience a lot of injuries, hence why we're all in business. And so I think you learn a lot and, you know, coming full circle back to being a runner, it helps, you know, if you've had a shoulder injury, it helps when you treat a shoulder injury. If you've had a knee injury, it's a running knee injury, and you're a runner, I think it resonates all around. Yeah. And yeah, the longer you spend running, the more injuries you'll pick up. And I think that's just part and parcel. I think that's what kind of makes us unique, because we're not getting slide tackled or, you know, we're not jumping into people. And well, it's not meant to be non-contact.
It's all self-inflicted.
Yeah. Canny cross is a bit different, I think.
That's even more self-inflicted.
So I think like the uniqueness of it, and then a lot of sports, even team sport, running still forms the basis of them. Mm. But I might just be biased. So
I'm interested then, because I'm keen for this. If there are therapists out there who realize there's a lot of runners around them, that there's running clubs and there's like local maybe halves, park runs, marathons, thinking, wow, there's people that I can really help and I really want to. What do you think would help them get these runners in? Do they need to have a certain level of running themselves, or do they have to start going down to local events? Or how, if they haven't already got these runners coming to them, what are some tips to try and get these runners coming through their door?
Start coaching and you can get them injured yourself.
Mend them, then mend them.
And as a massage therapist, I started out going to local or races that were organised by the club I'm affiliated with. So you were visible for a start, and people just would, they would get around word of mouth as well. So the club races were a good place to start.
I think thinking about online as well, like on my website, I have a blog, which I haven't updated for ages, but it's there. And there are a couple of bits about, you know, should I have a massage after I've done a marathon? Will it help this? You know, what's a pre and post race massage about? And every year and around this time of year, when I look at the clicks on my website, people start to click on those articles again because it's marathon season. And that kind of thing just helps. It helps to pull traffic towards your website if you've got that sort of stuff on there.
Involved in one way or another, don't you?
I think with runners, because running is such a social thing. I'm not a social runner at all. You know, the idea of saying to somebody, do you fancy going out for a run? It's just, for me, it makes me feel a bit sick thinking about it. For me, running is being by myself with the elements, being on the elements, lovely, me against the rain, the sun, the wind, love it. But the idea of expecting to talk to someone next to me whilst I'm having this out-of-body experience is just not for me. But that in my career has caused problems, because I think a lot of runners do it for the social reasons and the mixing, and they're more likely to go and see someone who is a friend of a friend whose face they know. I think they're quite, is that, have you had that experience, or do you think that is the case with runners in particular?
Yeah, definitely.
I think the word of mouth definitely helps. But again, going back to runners being a unique breed and actually us being runners, I think we, as a runner myself, like the therapists I've gotten with the past, the ones that actually have also been able to be social with, you know, as Chris mentioned, talk about my races, people who you share interests with. If you as a therapist shares interest with these people, they're going to like you. They're going to recommend their friends to you, because their friends by definition will share the same values as them, and then they'll come and follow us. So I think it's probably a very organic thing. I think going to events and obviously handing out flyers, like that's the environment you want to work in anyway. So I think that naturally builds and naturally helps. Just to play devil's advocate a little bit, I'm quite honest with what I think of sports massage as a sports massage therapist. And the narrative that's around it, and that might lose me business at times. So it's finding the right balance with all of this stuff and think. And yeah, word of mouth is probably the best if you're able to get your values out, I guess, in business and in as a therapist. Just my opinion.
I think there's a lot of a lot of runners, their big fear seems to be anyway is obviously just going to a therapist and instantly being told that they can't run anymore. So, and obviously having that and having people have that experience with you, and that gets talked on quite early on in my sessions generally with people. I've just met them. It's just I hear a lot of people and this, and obviously the last thing we want is to stop you running. So let's have a good solid assessment so that we can really make some informed decisions on that. But I'm always I'm kind of the guy that if I can keep you running, I will keep you running. And straight away, they just that gap drops. And then they're like, right, okay, let's do this together. And we go from there, basically.
Very cool. Very good.
I'd say, Mike, if you're a runner, there's a kind of a given empathy formed in the session where as soon as you come, you have a runner come in your clinic, they know you're a runner, that it kind of creates that empathy straight away. You don't even have to work too hard for it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Do you think connected with that, I've seen with other maybe less experienced therapists that they're worried that because they're not as fast as the other runners who they want to treat, they're a bit worried about going down to the local park run because they're thinking, who's going to ask, who's going to come and see me if they know that I'm doing a 40 minute, 5K or something. So is that something you've either experienced yourself or still experienced a little bit? And if so, have you got any tips for helping people get over that?
I mean, I'm quite a mediocre runner. I will quite cheerfully say that I am happily mediocre.
I wish I could say I was mediocre still. That's great. Actually.
But it doesn't seem to put people off. I think that, people just like the fact that you are a runner and you understand how important it is to them.
Mm. Were you nervous at first? Or, you belong to, your main activity is Canicross, isn't it?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just nerve-wracking just sort of going to a new club and meeting new people. But exactly. I've always been quite open that, the reason that I came into this job was because of my running background, and I'm not the fastest. And a lot of my social media, if I put something on about my running, it's like, no, I'm not very fast, but I really love it. And I want you to carry on loving it as well. So come and see me and, we'll try and sort this out. And I tend to go on that, not on, I'll make you the fastest person around, because I can't massage you into being any faster anyway. Mm-hmm. But very much, I'll try and keep you going as much as we can.
I think that's brilliant, because that shows the passion. And when I started out, I was actually concerned of the opposite, that I suppose locally I'm one of the quicker runners, and I was known for that, and I didn't want to almost become elitist with it and people not think they can see me because they're not the fastest. I learned this when I worked in running retail, is before I got into any sort of profession with running, I just assume most people are like me. And then I started working in a running shop and I realized, no, I'm actually the minority. I think you go down to a park run and they are the busiest, from a lot of them from 25 minutes through to 40, 50 minutes. So I think actually if you're not fast, you probably actually relate with most runners. And then also people like me, we get injured less typically. Because our training, we've trained smart from a young age. Well, hopefully we have anyway. And actually, the more training you do and the more balanced your training is and your training intensity distribution, the less you need treatments. I think then you're going into, I just need a massage just because I like them and they make me feel better. But I think, if you're a passionate therapist and a passionate runner as well, it doesn't matter what level you are, you're going to resonate with everybody else who's passionate. And I think that's going to stick with you. And they know it's within your best interest as a therapist to get them better, is to ironically not get them through your door. And as a result, they'll probably bring you more business, I think, as well.
I think I was thinking back to the start of it, I guess, when I got into it, when I wasn't into running or triathlon or anything at that point. And actually the draw for me was I was just showing just genuine interest, and I was just really asking them questions. I was just sat there fascinated by it all. And I was just this is amazing that you can do this. And, that they love that, obviously. And just kind of having that, someone going I think you're ace. I think you're amazing. I can't believe you can do this. like no one doesn't like to hear that, do they really? So
no.
Like, that's on the side of you, if you're not, you know, into the sport yourself. I think it's not to say, okay, you know, you shouldn't be working with runners or anything, because actually, you know, it's just, again, it's that same as anything, isn't it? Just showing that genuine interest in someone, asking questions and just learning about them, really.
Brilliant. Do you think, Chris, sorry, I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you think that feeds back into, like, understanding runners and comes back to, actually, if you're not a runner, doesn't mean you can't, like, treat runners?
Yeah, exactly. This is it. Because if you, like, say, if you're not a runner, even so, if you're just showing that genuine interest and, like, you know, they perceive that, okay, this person really wants to hear about this and they want to learn, and you can show them, you know, and ask them, like, what resources have you got for me? You know, how can you help me better understand what you're doing? Like, that in itself, like, that's huge, isn't it? Like, I've treated people
obviously,
in different sports, and I don't understand the sport, so I have to actively ask and say, I'm really sorry, but I don't know much about this. Like, could you, you know, direct some resources? Cool, isn't it? Like, again, people, you showing that genuine interest and actually, like, you know, this is going over and above and I'm going to do this job well, and let's work and do it together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great tips, great stuff coming out. So we've covered the fact that it does help if you're a runner, but maybe more importantly, you don't have to be a fantastically fast runner. Don't be embarrassed about your time. It's more a case of just showing up and showing people that you care, that you want to help. If anything, even if you are, you know, slower and you're still there, that shows a certain kind of part of your character. Show, yeah, I'm slower, so what? It's not all about that. It's about me being here. I really want to help you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all part of a team. So it's great. And I love the fact that it's really, hopefully it's inspiring to listeners that Shane had the opposite, where it was like, oh, I'm going to be too fast. People can think I'm elite. People can hang it. So even somebody who's like doing that sort of, those sort of speeds, is still going to have imposter syndrome or some kind of like, oh, I shouldn't be here. No one's going to want to know me sort of thing. So it's great. It works from both ends. So yeah, interesting. Let's move on maybe to common injuries. Is there such a thing as the most common injuries in running, in your experience, or do you get to see all sorts of different things in clinic?
Anybody? I mean, I did a straw poll. This is a Canicross straw poll of my club before I came on tonight, and it was all about ankles. There's just ankles being sprained left, right and center. And I think that's just, yeah, you're running at speed over terrain and it's going to happen. Be really interested, like, if that's really common for just trail running generally, because I tend to sort of focus. A lot of my running clients are canicrossers. I suspect for trail running, it's probably similar, but it's not something that I would want to say with any certainty.
That's really interesting. That's going to open up a little chat now about, right, there's running and then there's trail running, there's canicross, there's different distances, you know, there's track running, there's all sorts of different environments which you need to know if you're working with your patient. So let's do, if you don't mind, I'll flip it on its head and do canicross after trail running, because I think that's basically trail running with a dog pulling you along. So so let's go trail running first of all. Who out of you guys, who particularly works with trail runners or done trail running yourself, and if so, what sort of injuries do you think are more prevalent?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few trail runners and orienteers actually. All right, so apart from the injuries where they're running into trees, I think it is mostly ankles, knees. Yeah. I also don't know whether with trail runners there's a bit more of a culture of just running and using your running as training, so whether some of them are slightly less robust because they won't do as much strength work or any stuff outside of it. Again, if trail running is associated with ultra running, there's a big component on a lot of people like going quite slow relatively. So they might not do as much speed work either. So I think that feeds into it. But actually, I think from just off the top of my head, I've not quite done the extensive research, but I think ankles, shin pain, usually. Obviously, the loading mechanics are completely different when you're on a trail. One, I think that's a good thing, and I'd recommend everybody does some trail running, but yeah, I think because you can't control as much either. Yeah. And from year to year, it can be different. We've had so much rain this year. Like, that's by definition going to mean that this winter will be different loading patterns to last winter. So as a runner, you can't always just think, well, I did that last year, so this should be fine.
Hey there, Matt Phillips here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast. Just 60 seconds to remind you that if you're looking for beard grooming products, there is a Sports Therapy Association discount code that will get you 15% off at The Brighton Beard Company, website thebrightonbeardcompany.co.uk. Yes, I am biased, what with Brighton being my hometown, but the Brighton Beard Company really do offer an absolutely amazing selection of luxurious beard balms and impeccably scented oils, all handmade in small batches with 100% natural ingredients. Their current spring collection, for example, contains bergamot, coriander, thyme and lavender, giving you a fresh and energizing essence with both citrusy and peppery notes, making it the perfect gift for you, a family member, or any friend with facial hair. Go to thebrightonbeardcompany.co.uk and get 15% off now by entering the discount code STA15. Doesn't include already discounted bundles. So all in agreement then that most of the trail runners and orienteers and that who we see, it's more ankles than knees then? Is that safe to say? And is that because of the terrain then? Is that because of the fact that you're having to invert, all that more.
Or maybe as well, part of it again, people tend to like, it's almost like a, like it was almost a rite of passage that people finish on the roads and then go into trails. Mm-hmm. Is it because the body's been conditioned with impacts on hard surfaces where you get energy, mm-hmm. and then you're going soft, uneven surfaces with no energy return? So there might be something to do with that as well, perhaps.
And I think sometimes people don't realise how different it is. Like, I had someone come to see me the other day who's training to do a trail half marathon. I was like, well, where are you doing your training? He's like, well, mostly I'm running on the road. I was like, you need to get off the road. You need to train on the surface that you're going to be running on, especially because a lot of it's on the beach. I was like, dude, you need to get onto some sand. You can't train on the road and then run on a beach. You know, your legs will fall off. And I think that sometimes people don't realise how much of a difference that is going to make until something starts to complain.
That's really cool. So yeah, specificity, getting somebody to, especially if they're going in for a race or something, getting training on what they're going to be training, the same kind. If it's undulating, you need to be doing more hills and stuff. If it's flat, then, you know, you can probably stay off the hills for the moment unless it's early on. So in that case, I'm going to draw upon your expertise now to think, one, what could trail runners be doing to reduce the risk of injury, which is tricky. And then afterwards, we'll go, what are some of your go-tos if somebody is coming in with ankle-related pain in order to rehab them properly and fully to be able to go out and do what they're going. So let's start with the reducing the risk of injury for trail runners. Is there things they should be doing more than a flat road runner sort of thing?
I think it sounds counterintuitive, but I think going back into actually what an elite athlete might do, running drills, movement drills, low level plyometric stuff, obviously not overemphasizing on it if they're not needing to build really elastic tendons, etc., because of the loading on there. But think not many runners do anything else other than run. So any more ankle work, I think, is great. I love prescribing stuff that people can do like around the house, like tiptoe walking and duck walks and stuff like that, just to get the ankles moving more. And also, I suppose this underpins all injuries, but actually controlling the training load a little bit. If they got injured because of everything on trails, well, actually get back and do a bit more on the road again. If you're doing everything on the road, actually, you need to do some trail running, this specificity, as you mentioned. So I think they're the two things I usually work on, looking at actually what is their running distribution in terms of the surfaces, and then just throwing in some easy drill work that you might see a track athlete do.
Go into a bit more detail. You mentioned a couple of exercises then, just different ways of walking in that in order to strengthen those ankles. So what were some of your... People will be sitting there now with their pens going.
walking on your tiptoes.
Lovely.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
You know, really burns your calves. But I call them duck walks, but walking on your heels. So, you know, basically going into full dorsiflexion really, again, aches your shins. And then from that, I typically progress into things like pogo jumps, which are basically just sort of springing up using your feet, keeping nice straight legs. Now, I'm a big, big fan of those three. And me personally, not saying there's a way you should do anything, but I think the attention span of us runners isn't great. As soon as you've told them they can do some running, that's it. They're off and prepared. Try to keep like no more than three things.
Brilliant.
Try and improve adherence. And again, those are specific because they're a bit more fun. They're a bit more easy, I think, to integrate than finding a step and spending 10 minutes doing calf raises. But that's just my opinion again.
Yeah. That's really
cool. How about
skipping? Skipping, I love skipping. It's great. And hops, yeah.
I feel like I need to take notes. I sprained my ankle in January.
That's a really important point, actually. And I've seen Chris kind of, all of you are amazing. Chris has just got some great graphics out there. But Chris, I've seen you harping on quite a lot about how, like, don't give your runner too many exercises and things, because it's just exactly what Shane said here. You know, we have to remember that our runners just want to get out. So just getting to do three exercises will be tricky enough. So is there any go-to favorites for you, Chris, if you're thinking, like, three exercises to get them to be a little bit more plyometric, a little bit more?
Obviously off the back watch here, you've been saying, like, and just thinking, I guess, a bit trail as well, thinking a little bit in terms of, like, multi-directional work as well. So pogos, not just thinking, right, okay, you're sagittal playing all the time as well, thinking, right, okay, can I give, like, some lateral pogos and start challenging that a little bit more, playing around with, like, different depths as well. So thinking about, right, okay, not just, like, shallow pogos, but can I get a little bit more height in here? Can we look at stuff, like, later on again, but things like depth jumps and, you know, like, some of those bigger impacts. Like, if you think in terms of, like, trails and ultras and stuff, we have to think, right, okay, you've got the running sections, but then you've also got things where you might be going over styles. We're having to actually do some pretty bigger drops off the top of the walls and things like that. Mm-hmm. Again, that comes with obviously the understanding of the sport and thinking about that and actually what are they going to encounter and therefore what forces do we have to deal with. That sort of stuff can be really important. And I guess, again, depending on where they're at within the training, if, for instance, someone's a little bit more new to trails or they're thinking about going from kind of road running through to trail, classically people might go, say, I've done a marathon, so I want to do an ultra marathon. Very much kind of then trail, which is quite classic. People walking, because the runners, like, seem to hate walking, and it's such a good way of training. So in which we're just getting on, getting some trail shoes on, and getting used to being on that terrain, walking where you've just got lower force versions of what you're going to be doing, essentially. Get going with that, get some good uphill and downhill running drills in, basically, with walking and making them maybe a little bit more walk run in nature. And again, just kind of like reintroducing those forces, basically, bit by bit, essentially.
I love that. I love the fact that you're taking, and I'm sure Shane would have come to that eventually, but you just, rather than inventing new exercises, it's just a progression from doing what Shane recommended as the first thing and then adding multi-direction to it. Mm. Yeah, so adding those transverse planes and things. You can do that with any exercise, can't you? It's a progression to prepare for that. Mm. Really cool. Penny, Sarah, what you got?
Yeah, it also depends what stage their injury is at and what they can manage. So what run they are on. So I would say, previous to the stuff that Shane was talking about, and Chris as well, you would probably look at something more like a single leg star work, some curtsies, something that can be done on a static level, but still involves rotation, flexion, et cetera, of the ankle, just to challenge it at that level before you start adding the dynamics to it. So I would just check where they're or measure with their injury first and then go from there and build up to the levels that Chris and Shane are talking about.
Brilliant. So rehab essentially often comes regressing back from those exercises we're getting healthy runners to do and then building up to being able to do those things again. So we wouldn't get somebody who's just had a calf strain straight away doing pogoing around the lounge, but we need to break that down and give them something less slow.
It's amazing how many people say they can run, but as soon as you get them to try and balance on one leg, they're like, oh, I'm terrible at this. I'm really bad at this. Mm. It's like, yeah, but you know, you run 60 miles a week. How can you be bad at balancing on one leg? It doesn't make sense. It's like they've hopped too many stones, basically.
Cool. Like it.
Rehab could be fun as well. You can do a lot of salsa dancing. There's a lot of lateral movement in salsa dancing.
Good
idea. Back and forth, side and side. Yeah, that's my rehab.
You just said that everyone on the screen is starting to just kind of like little jiggle in their seats, moving around.
Is that an excuse to do some dancing at some CBD courses there?
Yeah.
Amazing. Brilliant.
That's good. Really awesome. Great stuff there, people. I love it. Some really great advice. And then also, I think, and we've already kind of touched upon it, talking about that ladder, which I think, Sarah, you mentioned, I love the idea of a ladder. Often we do forget to take them far enough up that ladder before letting them go back to running again, or letting them go back to the speeds of the inclines of the terrains. We forget to get them to do pretty difficult, nasty plyometric exercises as that end stage rehab. I think that's where a lot of therapists fall back, and that's why their runner goes out and suddenly they're back in your clinic again, which isn't good for business. It was in the 90s, it was a perfect model. But nowadays, it just gives you a bad reputation. They'll go and see someone else because there's so many therapists out there now who can offer them something else. So great stuff. Okay, so let's add all of that to a dog. How? Bring you along.
What could go wrong with that?
That was enough of the multi-terrain and the need for transverse movements and reaction time. Just stick a dog in the mix.
Unpredictable animal as well. Would it help if I just sort of explain a bit about what Canicross is?
That'd be great. We'd love to, yeah.
Please.
Yep. So it's canine cross country is essentially what it stands for, and it is trail running with your dog. If I really quickly try to share my screen again, then I will show you this picture of what I'm talking about. So for those listening on the podcast, this is me canicrossing with my dog. Can you see that?
We can see that.
Cool. So basically I've got a belt that goes around my hips, which is attached to a bungee lead, which is attached to my dog's harness. And the harness is designed for him to be able to pull into. And this was about halfway through a 5K race and the first one that we did after I'd been injured. So we were both a bit unfit, but we were doing our best. But that kind of shows how hard I hope he's really pulling. So let's stop sharing and come back. So what you would use for canicross is the runner wears a belt, and this is mine. And what you have is a big broad strap that sits around the back of the hips. That's sort of suspended from a little skinny waist strap. There should be no pressure on the waist strap. All the pulling comes through the hips. And then you've got two leg straps underneath, which stop it from riding up. So it's a little bit like a harness and you kind of climb into it. That's attached to a bungee lead, to excuse the rude words on my bungee lead, which insulates you a bit from the dog jerking around. And then that's attached onto the harness. So in addition to all the things that come along with trail running, the trip hazards, the difficult terrain, you then have the addition of a dog who's pulling you along. And how hard they pull will vary from dog to dog. Some, like my dog, is quite a strong puller. Some dogs are just quite happy to trot along with you and it's quite civilized and nice. But mine pulls really hard. And so you're going to be running a lot quicker than you're used to quite soon in the process as well, because your dog will get fit a lot quicker than you will. And so if I look at some stats off my watch, which are not very scientific, but, you know, it's the best I've got, my stride length increases from like about a meter to a meter 29 when I'm canicrossing between that and an easy run. My cadence goes up a lot. The vertical oscillation, I don't know how my watch knows this, but apparently that goes up a lot. I'm spending less time on the ground and my pace goes from, I don't know if I want to share this, it's embarrassing, but my easy run pace is about 8:44 per kilometer and my canicross pace on this one was 5:10 per kilometer, and that was quite a technical trail, so we were going quite slowly. And he's taken 6 minutes off my 5K time. So what you tend to look at, what you would tend to be thinking if someone comes and says, I'm a canicrosser, you want to think about, is their belt fitted properly? Are they using the right equipment? People can say, I'm running with my dog, and they might have something that goes around their waist. And then obviously you're putting your back at risk. So are they using the correct equipment? Are they sure it's sitting in the right place? How hard does their dog pull? Is their dog quite steady, or are they prone to suddenly vanishing off sideways after squirrels? Because obviously suddenly you're running along in a straight line and now you're going sideways. Okay, that's fine. And you need to think about the biomechanics. You would expect to see ankle injuries, hamstrings, glutes, that kind of thing. You need to be thinking about balance and proprioception, because you're not necessarily going to land where you think you're going to land, because as you're in the air, the dog's going to pull you forward. And so people need to kind of get their head around that, and you need to get used to that. Your form is possibly going to change because you're being pulled forward from the hips. So you need to be thinking about that. And you need to be looking at things like core strength and stability, and have you got enough of those two things to balance against the traction the dog's giving you.
Fascinating. Wow. It makes me wonder whether trail runners, as part of their cross training to prepare them for trail running, should go out with the dog. And imagine then taking that dog off and just having that ability to reaction time. That's incredible. So yes, Penny, you're going to say, were you going to jump in there? Do I see you?
I wanted to ask if there's like proper training that we can do, because I'm really interested now.
Would you mean as in training to start canicross?
Yeah.
So what I would recommend doing is have a look online. I got my kit from a website called DogFit, and they have a harness finding form where you can put your dog's measurements in and they'll help you find the right kit. Mm-hmm. And they do starter packs. And then do the Catch to 5K with your dog. Even if you're already a runner, even if, you know, you're used to running, do that anyway, because the dog's got to get used to pulling you as well. That's like, mm-hmm. that's a lot for the dog. That's hard work for them. You might skip through it a bit more quickly than if you were starting from scratch, but it's always a good idea to get used to that. And have a look and see if you've got a local Canicross club.
Because I will.
As you can hear, we really like talking about it.
I'm doing a whole episode. Hanny, you're going to have to come back and maybe come with members. It sounds really fascinating. And I can see just from the look on your dog's face, the enjoyment it must give you, the fact that it's amazing. But we'll do a whole episode on this. Oh. I'm thinking maybe there's so much in there which could change injuries. It's interesting you said like vertical oscillation was increasing. And I think that's just the body trying to manage how it's what it's going to do during this flight time. It can't possibly have a cadence which is fast enough to keep you moving along the ground. So it's like we'll send them up in the air.
Yeah.
But obviously that means you're gonna be landing harder. Not only are you gonna be landing on a stone somewhere or on even ground, you're gonna be landing harder.
So and if you do trip
a lot there.
If you do trip, obviously you've got a lot of forward pressure. So like I tripped last year. I caught my foot. I was jumping over a bike jump in the woods and I caught my toe. And because I had the dog pulling me forward, I just couldn't recover at all. And I just broke my fall with my face. Mm. So it was fine. But, you know, everyone falls over. Everyone falls over. It just comes with the territory. So, yeah.
There was some really good talk to therapy experts. Quite a common theme amongst three, I think, Angela Jackson, physio, Andrew, his last name's always Mook something. I can't remember his name. The Irish guy. Anyway, it was all about this idea of training athletes for the chaos, which is their sporting environment. And the one word which enters my mind, not only with canicross, but even with trail, is there's more chaos out there. There's more unpredictability. And they were kind of talking a lot about they were relating it more to football, to rugby, where you are suddenly going to have to move out of the way from an opponent and you're going to have to react to your environment. And often in rehab, we don't prepare people for this enough, and they will do it through lights, through signals, through having to quickly change direction, landing position. But I think even with trail runners, that could be something which therapists would benefit from, where you're not just allowing the runner to be multi-directional, move to the right, move to the left, move backwards. I think that's a case where you could stand in front or even have lights where they have to react to the light and suddenly change. Because I guess that's what's happening, especially with the dog, where you say you don't know where you're going to land. Your body's got to suddenly eccentrically decelerate and then accelerate again, just like that in a moment. And if you can't do that, then you're bound to get muscles tired and strained and it is really quite chaotic. So, Chris, have you experimented with
my
that
life?
At all?
Am I risking my life, Hannah? Just running on the road?
No, not your whole life.
He's so good. No, he just turns around and looks at me.
Penny, we'll make sure you're in the Canicross episode. Yeah. You might be there now. Your arm in a brace and your neck in one of those kind of
things. Oh, I'll show the picture of the black eye that I got when I fell over, and everyone go, oh, God, don't do that.
Chris, have you worked much with reactive stuff? Have you got involved in your lights, or have you? I can imagine you getting involved with red and green lights.
You know what? Yeah, I played around at Mike Rice's place. Yes, with a bit of that stuff. Yeah, in our place, to be fair, we don't really have anything like that. So what I do have is a bit of they're like basically like little reaction balls where they're like ogly shaped, and you can basically like bounce them, and you don't know which direction it's going to go in.
Oh. Yeah, we call them rugby balls down south. Yeah.
It's after the ball, basically, and try to get them in it. Chaos, basically. It's just that throwing that in just reacts. I've done quite a bit of stuff with things where we'll get like bouncing off things off walls and things like that, and kind of throwing where they've got to turn when I shout and things like this. To things quickly and played around with that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's good fun.
So great. Really important in-stage rehab to get the runner used to when they do have to suddenly change direction, to miss that tree, to suddenly get their footing back when they hit that uneven terrain or something.
I think one thing as well, thinking about canicross, sorry, not to drag it back to that too much, but warm-ups are particularly important, because if you're going to go for a trail run generally, I think a lot of people, not me, but obviously, you're like, oh, I'll just start slowly and that's my warm-up and I'll run slowly for the first 5 minutes. But you don't really do that when you do canicross. You start flat out. And so warming up is something that I think we're not, ask people if they warm up, because we're not always very good at doing that, because we're sorting our dogs out and we're not really very good at cooling down because we're sorting our dogs out. And then by the time we've sorted the dog out, you're like, oh, I think I'm cool now. I'm just going to go and have a cup of tea and a chat. And so that's quite important. And actually, I'd be really interested if anyone else on the panel, like, what do you say about warm-ups? Because we're all
I go for a run before I run with my dog. Does that help? I do a couple of miles, honestly. I do a couple of miles before I come and get him to then run with him.
Yeah, that's probably quite sensible. I should probably do that.
Yeah,
it's a good topic because lots of the traditional advice is, oh, well, have you warmed up? Or guess what? The runner says no. Oh, well, that's what's causing your injury. Because you know that no runner is going to say, oh, yes, yes, I sprinted. Yeah. But how, what do in 2024 now, and I don't know what the answer is going to be, I'm not going to judge, but what do we recommend? It'll depend on the individual in front of us, but what do we recommend a warm-up needs to be for a lot of runners, some runners?
I think maybe unpopular opinion, they're not as important as it's made out to be, like we're made out to believe. And I think if you tell runners without understanding their context, what they want to do, that they need to warm up, I think you start to tie into some, sorry, that's, if you can hear that, it's a dog.
Your dog, fine. dog friendly tonight. Fine.
Yeah. Get him in some Caddy Cross. I think it depends on the runner. It depends on the relative intensity you're going to be doing something. I think it's a really good point about if your dog is going to take you out fast, because, you know, a lot of the research on warm up is mainly about perception of effort. But it's just uncomfortable if you're doing something hard, your body's not ready to do it. As for increasing the risk of injuries and things like that, I don't think that's really that accurate or true. It's certainly not in my case when I've kind of been late to a race or I've had to scrimp on my warm-up a little bit. I felt awful starting, but it's not always even impacting my performance.
Shane, what would you say if so you're clients who are already injured who are trying to get back to running, would you give them a specific warm-up to make sure that their injured area is ready to go, or
yes,
would you recommend the same?
I'd have this discussion with a lot of them. Sometimes I don't know if you'd call it manipulative or not, but sometimes I do encourage a warm-up a bit more, because actually if that's the time that person's going to do their rehab, warm-up stuff that you can do, like the drills and the things, and I'm sure Chris sets a lot of his runners as well. All what's the components of a warm-up other than running? A really good rehab and almost prehab work as well. Growing up, I didn't get too many injuries and I'd seem to get away with murder. But looking back, it's because I lived near where I trained up at the track. I was doing warm-ups 2 or 3 times a week, just because it's what you did. So even when I was injured, I wanted to go back and see my mates and be in a social environment, and I always did the warm-up. So call it bias or not, despite me not knowing that it's not overly important in terms of putting the emphasis on it from a injury reduction point of view, I think that's a load of crap, if I'm honest. But I think it's a really good time to people to do their rehab stuff, because if you tell them it's part of their running and it's going to make them a better runner, and it's not adding in boring rehab exercises, I think it's a really useful time to do it. And coming back to the chaos and the reactions and stuff, when you're doing warm-up drills, high knees, or this type of thing, you're not going to be running with your knees up to your chest, unless you're doing Caddy Cross perhaps. But when you're doing that in warm-ups, like, you're increasing your movement window and you're increasing that load window. And if people just run and only run and then only do a run to warm up for their running, they don't get much room for error, really. So I think warm-ups are good for that. But I really don't think it's a case of you warm up, you reduce the chance of injury.
So it's a case of where it might make a difference, but there's lower hanging fruit, which is always the nice expression, which if people believe that their 5 minutes of whatever they do is going to stop them from getting injured, as opposed to monitoring their training load or running at a sensible pace or whatever it is, then yeah, they're going to put all their trust in something which is less likely to work than something else. I think that's probably the message. Yeah. How do you sit in terms of, Chris, I was going to say to you, because you've been through the years of seeing things come and go and change, but are you much for getting athletes to do something other than run at a slower pace before their run in training?
Get it. It kind of depends on the sessions. So like, It's typically a case of like, if I'm just like, if you're doing a higher intensity session, then let's just drill you a little bit more. But again, it will be more sort of like running drill stuff, really, rather than it being like, right, okay, I want you to do this very specific kind of warm up and things like, again, similar, like in terms of like, even, you know, just in clinical experience, I don't really see many issues with people not really warming up. Like, it just doesn't seem to be a big thing. And yeah, it is a case of, I guess, like from the warmer, obviously there's like the injury risk side of things. And then like, I think we spoke about before in terms of like psychological switch, mm-hmm. to just being like, just get someone to be basically like a bit more present and like, right, okay, I'm ready to go. and things like that can be really good just in terms of actually just switching their mindset a little bit from work and life stresses and stuff like that to actually just being like, right, I'm focused on something. And actually that can have the bigger impact sometimes rather than it be so much of an injurious thing. And it just gets them to just be a bit more mindful, a bit more present. And they're just like, right, I'm ready to go for the session.
Definitely. I think Sarah's point was interesting as well. When you have got somebody who's injured, and again, it depends on the person, like to quote like Greg Lehman, because I know he loves being quoted, but the whole kind of poke the bear thing, like you're going to have a runner who maybe if they're coming back from injury, they're not going to touch the bear. They're going to be standing so far away. They're worried about it. They've got kinesphobia. And maybe they do need some calf pumps and even a little bit of ankle dorsiflexion and just stuff to get them more confident. Then you've got someone of Shane's level of running who's probably just going to jump and hump the bear to death because they're not scared of anything. So they don't quite need the kind of warm up and gentle handling as the person who's less confident in their own body because they know what their body can do. So I think, again, like you said, Chris, it's psychological. A lot of the warm up, I think, is psychological. And I've made mistakes in the past, probably telling runners, you don't need a warm up. Don't you know this paper says, and this paper this. If the runner feels better for having their little warm up and putting their heel up on a, you know, and doing their hamstring stretches and adopting a range of movement they're not even going to use during their race, if that makes them feel better, you know what, as long as they're doing everything else, let them do it, you know. And it's, I think that's worth bearing that in mind as well.
I think, you know, Shane's idea of doing your rehab exercises, yeah, as your warm up is great because the runners will always make time for their run. They won't always make time for their rehab.
Rehab, yeah.
So if you can couple that together, brilliant idea.
Yep. And I think actually, Sarah, to jump on top of that, I often sometimes do the inverse. If I've got a runner coming in and they are keen and they do warm-ups, one, I ask them a lot of questions to back them into a corner. You know, oh, do you warm up before a race? Yeah. Okay, why do you do that? Oh, well, I feel better. You know, I move better, all of this. And I'm kind of like accidentally pushing them towards being like, yeah, you should do some rehab stuff. You should do that. But even if they're not going to adhere with it, it's very, in my experience, maybe runners just listen to me because I'm horrible to them. I don't know. I think
you get away with it. They know your times. I bet you're on Strava and everything. I bet you're the sort of therapist who actually puts their results on Strava.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to show me your Strava and let me see what you're doing now. I think I sometimes do that. Like, actually, what Chris said. Even a lot of us, no matter what our ability, we also run for a reason. It's a big part of actual genuine life management. They form parts of our identities. And then you get an injured runner who can't run. Just telling them they can go into a warm-up, if it's a very slow jog and some drills and some strides, it keeps them that sense of belonging and it keeps that sense of purpose. And then it's just these little things that return hope and, again, bridge the gap from fear of movement. And quite often, I don't know. I think that's more important than the actual tissue results or the injury results. Just letting somebody know that actually I don't need to be scared of an injury because there's still loads of stuff I can do whilst I'm injured. And a lot of the time, the things they learn by even just knowing they can go and do a warm up, they take that with them when they're back into full training anyway, whatever the event and whatever the ability. And you see that within your clients, and that's, well, if anything, it makes you a bit more proud of a therapist that you can give them those things that they can use the rest of their life rather than just rehab them from a calf strain or something.
Very nice. Look, time is unfortunately beating us once again. What I'm going to do in a second, and I always mean to tell you these, warn you about this before I put you on the spot, but I'm going to just ask you in turn to just for one idea to put theory into practice. So something you think therapists in a certain position could do next time they see their runner. It might not apply to them, but it will apply to somebody out there. So just one theory into practice, which you think of what we talked about tonight, you would recommend therapists who want to work with runners or who already work with runners could do. Okay. Before we do that, I'm just going to say, so you guys can think about that now. Okay. I'm giving you your time now. Okay. Your general advice, putting theory into practice. Whilst they're thinking about that and wishing that I'd warned them about that question beforehand, then I'll just let your listeners know that next Tuesday on the Sports Therapy Association podcast, so this is Tuesday, April the 9th, if you want to join us live at 8 p.m., then just come to YouTube or the Sports Therapy Association Facebook page. There's going to be episode 93, and we're going to have a special on concussion causes, risks, and treatment with special guest Nicola Hunt. Nicola is the director and owner of Physio Care Rehab, has got extensive research and experience in concussion, and is starting later this year. In fact, I think they've started now to offer some courses because it is an area. We've had Keith Burnett on the show before, who a lot of ST members will know. It's an area where there's a lot of ignorance and misinformation. And if you are working pitch side, particularly, obviously, then it's an area you need to know about and clear up some of the myths out there. So we're going to hear it from one of the specialists in that field, Nicola Hunt, next week. And also have details on face-to-face and online courses that she's offering to try and improve the information that's out there. So that's going to be on Tuesday, April the 9th, episode 193. If you want to join us live for that, like I say, just go onto YouTube or Facebook. Now we go back to episode 192. And this is where you wow us, give your one bit of theory into practice. Shane, you're the fastest here. We're not going to go in order of speed, so don't worry. Shane. What would be your one kind of like little bit of advice for people who either want to run or do work with runners out there?
Does it have to be something we've just covered?
No, it could be something that's just occurred to you if you want.
Write a training diary.
Okay, nice. Damn it, we're going to have a part two of this. Okay, yeah, keep a training diary to monitor load. That's good. Yeah, get them to write a training diary. Over to you, Hannah.
Oh, if it's something for people who want to start running, I like resetting your personal best every year because you're getting older every year. So don't race the person you were 10 years ago. Like 10 years ago, me had no children and wasn't running a business and had lots and lots of time for run. And right now I don't have any of that. So take it year by year is what I like to do.
That's really, really good. That's really good. Unless you're Matt Fitzgerald, of course. And then you can do crazy things like that. A word out for Matt. If everyone's familiar with Matt Fitzgerald, he's got long-term COVID and really suffering from it. Can't even run. I mean, it's like just terrible. But what does he do? Well, he decides he's going to run, walk 100K or something in a time or something just to keep his body going. But amazing. But anyway, yeah, great advice, Hannah. Love it. Penny, what's your theory into practice bit of advice for our listeners?
When therapists deal with runners, they have to understand that there's a lot of elements coming into the psychology of a runner, not just the actual running. There's a lot of things that they need to consider. They have to ask a lot of questions, basically, like how is the sleep? Do they get any help with the children? Do they have time to allocate their training properly? Because I've had a recent experience of someone that they keep getting injuries, and I found out that they only run twice a week, one short one, one long run. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about massive difference in distance. And it's like, well, that makes sense why you're getting injured. But it's because they have no other time to run.
Great. So get to know your person. Lovely. Chris?
Lots of questions.
Yeah, I guess kind of similar, isn't it? Like questions around them and also like what they understand, the position that they're in right now, when they're injured, what that means to them. So is this the first time they've been injured? Like, what does that injury mean to them? Where's their head at with it, basically? So that we can better understand that person in front of us and therefore the things that they would like to get from us as well and the time that we share together to help them move forward.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Like it. Yeah, talking to the runner in front of you. And Sarah?
I would say, as a therapist, go out and film races, film lots of different types of runners, getting used to all the different running styles, the problems that are going to arrive at your door if you've been out there already and got yourself acclimatized to all the different types of runners, you'll have a better chance of working, you know, successfully with them.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, get out there and spend your time filming other runners and then testing some of your theories. You soon see, don't you, that everyone runs differently once you start filming these people, especially when they're not injured and they're running faster than you ever will in a marathon. And you realize, how are they running like that and still doing a 3-hour marathon? And that's ridiculous. It does turn a lot of what we're told on its head when we realise that. So, yeah, great advice. Get out there and film some runners. Wicked. Right. Well, look, I've kept you 10 minutes longer than I promised people, but I'm so sorry for that. But thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in the live lounge as well. Thank you for your questions. Just wanted to mention a couple here that I didn't have time to mention. So, yeah, Imi Tester, thanks for joining us. Imi. Imi says, I would say trail runners get more falls, pulled muscles because of difficult terrain rather than lack of capacity, gait type injuries in general. Definitely, yeah, we've got to consider the terrain rather than just their running form and if they're ready to deal with that terrain. Totally different set of necessities they're going to need and skills. Cecily Hislop, hey Cecily, how are you doing? Cecily says, as a keen walker, when I've suggested trying to walk into a runner, I've had to pull out the daggers they've shot at me. Yeah. It's crazy that, again, but it's knowing the person, you know, if you just suddenly launch it to them, say, yeah, I'm going to suggest you walk, and they just walk out your door laughing, then it's your fault. You haven't broken to them gently and kind of, you know, open up that conversation in the right way. So yeah, great point, Cecily. And that was based on Chris's, wasn't it? Chris, people underestimate the power of walking in preparation for running, especially as part of rehab. Right, great. Thank you, guys. In the show notes, we will have information for all of our panel tonight. If you would like to be part of the STA panel for one of our first of the month episodes, remember next month, so that's going to be the first Tuesday in May, it's going to be Ask Us Anything Therapy for Team Sports. Something I shied away for 16, 17 years because I don't like teams. Then great. Please come on, because I'm going to be very quiet in that one. We've got a couple of people who have signed up for it. But yeah, we'd love to hear from you. If you've got experience working with teams and you've got something you'd like to share and tips, that'd be great. And also, like I say, we're going to have therapy for swimmers. So if you work with a lot of swimmers, that'd be great. And therapy for cyclists. And if you can think of anything else, I mean, I never thought of Canicross as much as I am now. So we will have a whole episode on Canicross. That would be great. I'll talk to you later about that, Hannah. That'd be amazing. And loads of pictures, please. Loads of pictures.
I'll just show small pictures. Dogs, that'll be
large runners. I want. Yeah. That's what I want to see a lot of. That'd be really cool. I think there's a lot there to be discovered, and it'd be great. Yes, we'll do that. Right. Thank you once again to my STA panel. So thank you very much, Penny DeMoss. Thank you for joining us. And Sarah Clatworthy and Shane Robinson and Hannah Tabram, not Tabram, as I initially said. Tabram.
Quite right.
And also, who have I missed out? And also Chris Kitson as well. Thank you much for joining us. And thank you, the listener. If you listen to the podcast and you've enjoyed what you heard, then do please leave us a rating, particularly on Apple Podcasts, because it just helps the good word of our guests get out there more, which is what it's all about. Right. Take care, people. Hopefully see some of you live next Tuesday, and look after each other. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.